Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Florida could save millions of dollars by releasing elderly prison inmates who are not a danger to society.
Only a little bit more than 168 would currently qualify for the conditioned aging release program.
Also tonight, LGBTQ advocates rally at the state capitol in opposition to proposals they say will give more employers the green light to discriminate in hiring.
While perhaps not intended, have the impact of harming desperately needed local protections for LGBTQ Floridians.
We'll also discover that a decline in the worldwide market for recyclable materials could hit Florida's local recycling programs hard. It's the start of the third week of the 2020 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. It's no secret that America's population is growing older. Not as well known is the fact that also holds true for the nation's prison population. And with Florida already home to more seniors than just about anywhere else in the country, the state's prison residents are also graying. Estimates show Florida could save hundreds of thousands of dollars if it were to allow certain inmates to be released from prison early. Blaise Gainey has the details.
If Senate and House proposals become law, state economists believe the Department of Corrections could get rid of more than 25 beds during the next fiscal year, saving at least $566,000. That's based on a full operating cost of nearly $23,000 per inmate. The bills are sponsored by Fort Lauderdale Democrat Representative Bobby DeBose and St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis.
Essentially, what the legislation does is allows those who are 70 and older, who are not have not been convicted of murder or terrorism, so those types of events, or crimes that would get you on the sex offender registry, to apply to the Department of Corrections for conditional aging release.
Brandis says it aligns Florida with other states.
17 states and the District of Columbia currently have aging inmate conditional release programs.
Currently, Florida has more than 2,000 inmates over the age of 70, but Brandis says not all of them would make the cut.
Of the almost 2,000 individuals inside the Department of Corrections today that are over the age of 70, only a little bit more than 168 would currently qualify for the conditioned aging release program that we've outlined in this legislation, but we believe hundreds more will come online over the next few years. We think this is an important step.
If all 168 were approved, the state would save millions. Another portion of the bill would make changes to the conditional medical release program for inmates. Brandis says the current system is sluggish.
What we're finding often is that by the time people make it all the way through the paperwork in the process, that they're only released with a few days left to live. And you can see by the numbers, the department is submitting 140 individuals, but only less than half of those are actually being granted conditional medical release. So this should help streamline the process.
The bill removes the Florida Commission of Offender Review from the process and sends cases to a 3-member panel within the department. That panel would determine whether an inmate is eligible for early release. I'm Blaise Gainey.
Equality Florida is rallying at the Capitol to condemn 4 proposals the group says could allow employers to discriminate against LGBTQ Floridians. Robbie Gaffney reports.
LGBTQ rights advocates are gathering in the Capitol. They're denouncing 4 measures by Republican lawmakers that would do drastically different things. Equality Florida's Joe Saunders is addressing one of the proposals.
In the opening week of the 2020 legislative session, 2 lawmakers in this building filed draconian bills that threaten doctors with 15 years in prison for providing health care to transgender young people.
Saunders is referring to the Vulnerable Child Protection Act. It would ban physicians from giving transgender minors hormone therapy or gender reassignment surgery. Equality Florida's Brandon Wolf says the bill will harm children, not protect them.
You know, for the state government to be taking on this issue and then labeling it in a way that gives this disingenuous sense that they're looking out for vulnerable young people is, in my view, offensive.
Wolf says sponsors should be backing LGBTQ civil rights bills instead and championing physicians who provide services to transgender minors.
We should not be trying to, you know, place a politician in that doctor's office telling the doctor what they can and cannot do to protect the life of that child.
LGBTQ rights advocates are also opposing a measure to allow the state to dictate Florida employee work hours, scheduling, job responsibilities, and more. Naples Republican Representative Bob Rommel says cities and counties set the standards for what employers can and can't do.
You know, we need uniformity in business so that employers understand that if they want to operate in multiple municipalities or counties, you know, they can't have different wage and benefit rules in each county or municipality. It would be a nightmare.
Wolf with Equality Florida fears Rommel's bill could repeal local human rights ordinances that protect LGBTQ workers from discrimination.
In general, you know, I think we oppose broad preemption bills that kind of suck the power out of municipalities and send it straight to the state of Florida.
Rommel says his bill doesn't mention human rights ordinances and therefore wouldn't affect them. But his preemption bill isn't the only one Equality Florida is eyeing. Gainesville Republican Senator Keith Perry and Naples Republican Representative Brian Donalds want the state to regulate home-based businesses. Wolf says this bill could allow home-based businesses to practice conversion therapy despite local bans. The practice tries to change someone's sexual orientation and gender identity.
They would suddenly be protected from, you know, those bans on conversion therapy. So I can't think of anything more horrifying than a parent sending their child to a conversion therapy practitioner in their garage.
Equality Florida released a statement saying it's now working with the bill's sponsors to resolve those issues. The last proposal drawing ire from LGBTQ advocates is Vero Beach Republican Representative Aaron Grawl's Parents' Bill of Rights. It reiterates a right to direct their child's education, health care, and mental health unless there's a compelling state interest to get involved. Wolf says it could cause schools to out LGBTQ children to their parents before that child is ready to tell them. He's calling all four proposals a smokescreen.
For me, the values here are quite simple. If in one breath you are saying that you want to give parents, you know, additional rights in school settings, and then, you know, you're, again, in that same breath saying that you want to, as you said, remove the rights of parents to make sure that their child is being taken care of with the best medical care in the world, I think it belies the intent here.
I'm Robbie Gaffney.
After similar proposals were vetoed twice in recent years, House leaders are again trying to slap a warning on Florida lottery tickets, while also looking to declare the lottery off-limits if Florida allows sports gambling. The House Gaming Control Subcommittee voted 14-1 today to support a proposal that would require the words "play responsibly" to cover 5% of the face of each ticket and be placed on all advertisements and promotions. The bill also would prohibit the use of electronic devices to play lottery games. Also forbid the Florida Lottery from conducting games in which winners are chosen based on the activities or outcomes of sporting events, and use $500,000 a year from a lottery trust fund for compulsive and addictive gambling programs. In casting the lone vote against the measure, Democratic Representative Adam Hasserly said he couldn't support the money for gambling prevention because half would come from funding now intended for education. A Senate bill identical to the proposal has not been heard in committees as lawmakers begin the third week of Florida's 60-day lawmaking session. Still to come on Capitol Report, facing an openly hostile Speaker of the House, Florida's official tourism marketing corporation is fighting for its life in the legislature.
Our state cannot afford to do without its number one industry, tourism.
Florida's recycling industry is struggling, and Tallahassee's program could be the next casualty.
Well, the running kind of joke, it's not too funny these days, is that it sounds like sustainability is almost becoming financially unsustainable.
State lawmakers consider more protections for young athletes.
Zach Martin was 16 years old when he died from exertional heat stroke, which he suffered at football practice.
And professional sports arenas are often named for sponsoring corporations, but plenty of Florida lawmakers don't want to see that happen to college and university sports facilities.
I can see a series of landmines, and I don't necessarily see a pathway through the minefield.
About a quarter of a century ago, the Florida Department of Commerce was abolished. In its place were set up a number of public-private partnerships, including an entity called Visit Florida. Its job was to promote tourism. As established, it was to be essentially immune to the changing tides of legislative politics. But as Victoria Dominguez reports, today's Visit Florida finds itself under fire, most especially from the most powerful person in the State House of Representatives.
Visit Florida employees recently gathered in the Capitol, holding signs and wearing magenta stickers reading, Save Visit Florida.
Our state cannot afford to do without its number one industry, tourism, and Visit Florida, who actively markets our state tourism.
Their CEO, Danny Young, says Visit Florida has helped draw millions of tourists to the state, and without it, Florida's economy will suffer.
The environment, infrastructure, education, these are things that tourism, because of the $86 billion that tourism brings into our economy, we are able to pay for all of these things.
Other supporters included Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez.
In 2018, we boasted record number of visitors, over 127 million.
And Representative Mel Ponder, former mayor of Destin.
The number one economic contributor to Florida is tourism. But what invites them, what attracts them, what keeps them here is an experience. And maybe relocate here, put a business here. Diversify, just come and grow what's going on in this place. Florida's economy is such a dependent upon it.
But there's one obstacle standing in the way, House Speaker Jose Oliva. While the office of the governor may support Visit Florida, Speaker Oliva is taking a different stance, arguing that without the company, taxpayer dollars could go to programs that need more funding, like Medicaid. When recently answering questions from the press, he was asked if he was using support for House Bill 607, which would allow nurses to manage patients without a physician's approval, as a bargaining chip for his position against Visit Florida.
No, that would be easy. I don't think so.
Two bills in the legislature would extend Visit Florida's operating time for the next 8 years. It may not be heard in the House. In the Senate, it's on its second hearing on Wednesday. Without more funding and an extension, Visit Florida will cease to exist on July 1st. I'm Victoria Dominguez.
A little more than 10 years ago, Florida set a goal to recycle 75% of its waste by this year. The state reached 60% in 2016, but since then, it's been backsliding. Now about 50% of the state's trash is recycled, and for the past few years, recycling markets have been getting worse, leading the recycling programs in some communities to close. Now, as Regan McCarthy reports, Tallahassee's program could be next.
I think the average container that comes through here is maybe a third of a ton, which isn't very much in terms of the what its value is.
Nancy Paul is the general manager at Marpan Recycling, a distribution center that collects recyclables and sells them to companies that will reuse the materials to make new products. Paul spoke with WFSU back in 2014 about the economics of recycling items like paper and cardboard.
It only has value if there's someone like Marpan who can combine all of those into one big load and get paid for it, because we send out loads that are 40,000 pounds.
Since then, those economics have changed. Marpan recently wrote a letter to the Tallahassee and Leon County Commissions explaining it now costs more money to collect and sort materials than Marpan can make back by selling them. Marpan is giving officials a year to come up with a plan or says it will have to close. Brian DeLoge is the chairman of the county commission.
Well, the running kind of
joke, it's not too funny these days, is that it sounds like sustainability is almost becoming financially unsustainable. And, you know, the problem is, how do you continue down a path that's really not supportable long term?
Florida's capital city isn't alone. Keena Corey is the executive director of a recycling advocacy group called the Florida Recycling Partnership. She says much of the trouble with recycling goes back 2 years to what many call the China sword.
So China is where we used to ship the majority of our recycled materials. And they would accept them, they processed them and used them. About 2 years ago, they decided that they were going to put a strict ban on how much contamination could be in these bales of recycled materials that was sent to them.
Before, Corey says, China accepted a contamination rate of 20%. Now that's down to 0.5%. That means China won't accept recyclables from most single-stream processing plants like Marpan. And it means there's more supply than demand within the U.S.
And that's really been one of our biggest problems. If you had contaminated materials and we're not selling them, then it's a serious problem. You have to remember that recyclables, if there's not a market for it, it's not recyclable. So we have to find more markets so that we can ship these materials to.
And another important step is education. Floridians need to learn how to get better at recycling so more places will be interested in accepting the materials. Corey says state lawmakers are floating a plan to include funding for recycling education in the budget this year. And she says people should also learn recycling isn't necessarily free.
Some companies in the very beginning, when they started doing the recycling program, they built that into the cost of the solid waste collection because they usually did both. Now it's costing them more to get rid of the recyclables because people are putting too much solid waste in it. And we really have to get people to be focused and get them to recycle because we still have those materials. So those materials are going to have to go somewhere. So would you much rather get them processed and have them as a recyclable material, or do you want to permit and allow another landfill in our state?
Corey says ensuring materials get recycled could mean processing centers will have to start charging more, and garbage fees could go up. In the meantime, she says her group is partnering with the Department of Environmental Protection to look into what the state's recycling goals should be. She says that 75% number lawmakers approved about 10 years ago seemed to come out of thin air. This time, she says experts are working together to come up with what she calls a more appropriate number. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Florida lawmakers want to protect student athletes from sweltering temperatures, which can pose risk of heat strokes. Ryan Daly reports senators heard from a parent whose son died as a result of overheating.
Zach Martin was 16 years old when he died from exertional heat stroke, which he suffered at football practice during the summertime in 2017.
Laurie Giordano started the Zach Martin Memorial Foundation to push for change after her son's death. Martin was an offensive lineman in football and goalie for his lacrosse team. He had a temperature of 107 degrees when he was taken to the hospital. Giordano says heat-related deaths can be preventable.
We've donated 35 tubs for cold water immersion to high schools in Florida.
A bill moving through the Senate would require schools participating under the Florida High School Athletics Association to have cooling zones with cold water immersion tubs or other cooling materials, whether it's a game, practice, or scrimmage. Last year, Florida saw one of the hottest summers on record. To protect athletes in Florida's K-12 public schools, legislators want more protections in place.
Florida leads the nation now in high school student athlete deaths. We just had another death last year.
Republican Senator Keith Perry is sponsoring the measure in his chamber. It would require the FHSAA to also provide training in monitoring heat stress in athletes. It mandates schools have an automated external defibrillator present and have coaches and volunteers be trained on how to use it.
What SB 1696 does, it adds requirements to protect students participating in athletics and extracurricular activities during hot weather to avoid preventable injury or death.
A 2018 report from the National Center for Catastrophic Sports Injury Research says since 1995, 64 football players have died nationally from a heat stroke, 47 at the high school level. A report from the State Office of Policy Analysis says evidence shows a 100% survival rate when an athlete is cooled down within the first 10 minutes of collapsing from heat exhaustion. Robert Sefcek is a member of the FHSAA's Sports Medicine Advisory Committee.
There are deadly risks in sports. Sudden cardiac arrest, heat stroke, and head injuries are the top three deadliest risks.
Sefcek spoke to the importance of having at the ready a way to cool an overheating athlete down.
We are asking for our schools to have cold tubs or a device that could be available for emergent treatment of somebody suffering from heat stress. We've got agencies in place that are at the ready to support our schools and help with this effort.
Democratic Senator Janet Cruz of Hillsborough County says schools need to be better prepared in a heating world.
Florida is very hot. And as our climate changes, I wonder how these athletes are going to be able to continue to be on a field in the scorching heat.
But Cruz has questions about where the money for schools to implement those safety measures would come from.
I worry a little bit because I saw what was defined as an indeterminate fiscal and wasn't sure where the money was going to come from. Whether it would be an unfunded mandate on the schools or not.
Perry says the costs of having some of these cooling measures on site will be reasonable.
I think you've already seen a movement where we've gotten where you can get a kiddie tub or even a tarp and ice. So and if we look at the overall, so we brought the cost potentially way down to a nominal level.
Perry's bill passed the Senate Education Committee unanimously. The House has a companion committee bill that is waiting for its first hearing. I'm Ryan Daly.
Lawmakers are settling back into busy mode tomorrow as we hear from Gina Jordan.
Here's what's happening tomorrow in the Florida legislature. The DCF Accountability Act would make a number of changes to child welfare and behavioral health programs administered by the Department of Children and Families to improve performance and funding. Life and long-term care insurers would be banned from canceling, limiting, or denying coverage based on genetic information. Healthcare practitioners would have new requirements for informing patients about non-opioid alternatives before prescribing or ordering an opioid drug. In a separate bill, patients and their representatives would be able to request healthcare records in paper or electronic format, and providers would have to produce those records within 14 days of a request. Two bills are on tap regarding the use of unmanned aerial vehicles. One expands the authorized use of drones by law enforcement and other agencies. The other creates an exception to the prohibited use of drones for managing and eradicating invasive plants or animals on public lands. And finally, the unnecessary declawing of a cat may soon be illegal in Florida. A bill outlines exceptions for specific therapeutic purposes. That's some of what's happening at the Capitol. I'm Gina Jordan.
Duke Energy Florida should get approval to collect $171.3 million from customers to cover costs related to last year's Hurricane Dorian. Staff members of the Florida Public Service Commission have recommended that move. The commission is slated during a February 4th meeting to take up Duke's request to collect the money. The NCAA is watching Florida and other states where some lawmakers want college athletes to be able to make money off the field. But leaders of the NCAA's federal and state legislation working group on name, image, and likeness efforts reaffirmed last week they won't support a system that makes students paid employees of schools. That's something Florida is not looking to do. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, it's commonplace for sports stadiums to bear the names of corporate sponsors. Think Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Camping World Stadium in Orlando, and Gillette Stadium for the New England Patriots. Now such businesses are eyeballing deals with colleges and universities, and some lawmakers don't like that. Lynn Hatter has more.
Right now, three of Florida's public universities, Florida Atlantic, the University of Central Florida, and the University of Florida, have inked deals to give businesses stadium naming privileges. Republican Representative Randy Fine does not believe those businesses should be marketing off taxpayer-funded public buildings.
Amway did not sponsor Amway Arena. I don't want to take a shot at any university. Amway did not put their name on the arena out of the goodness of their heart. They did it because they wanted to advertise their name. That is the case in all of these deals. And what we've learned today What we've learned today is that these are political decisions.
Fine points to a similar situation at two schools. One rejected a naming proposal, the other accepted it. He says there's no consistency on how schools deal with these questions, and he argues when it comes to political judgments, it's the responsibility of the legislature to set the rules. Fine's plan requires such naming rights to be vetted by the state legislature. The plan was recently workshopped in a House Education Committee. Democratic Representative Wen Gay Newton says the idea could provide cover to schools that grant naming rights only later to find out that the figure or entity is controversial or has become swept up in one.
We didn't know or we couldn't find it. It's not a good excuse after you plaster it 20 feet tall across the building when you're receiving taxpayer money. I would want somebody else to shelter that if that happened. If we forgot to use, say, Google to find out that these individuals are doing something that they shouldn't be doing, and now we're tied up with him and there's no get out of jail free card.
During the past few years, colleges and universities have removed names from buildings after learning of problems with the people or groups affiliated with them. Florida State University is trying to remove the name of former Supreme Court Justice B.K. Roberts from its law school after learning he authored several pro-segregation opinions. Republican Representative Jamie Grant says he's struggling to define what associations are proper and which ones aren't in the age of cancel culture.
So are we getting to a place at some point where we're kind of almost voting on or testing the moral outrage by one of our institutions taking funding to name a building or to name something? I guess I would just hope that we continue the dialogue because I can see a series of landmines. And I don't necessarily see a pathway through the minefield.
Democratic Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith feels similarly. He says the issue may be better left to colleges and universities to deal with.
I don't expect that any of you are going to decide that you're going to, you know, name a stadium like the NRA Stadium or something like that. But, you know, if it factored into the equation and your assessment on naming rights is that you now have to bring this entity before the legislature where any of us can object to any number of things that we find objectionable to the entity. And that's on both sides. It just can kind of be problematic, obviously, moving forward.
Fine says his proposal is not about using names to honor private donors. He's specifically targeting corporations that are trying to market off what amounts to state property.
We're not talking about philanthropic discussions. We're not talking about donors. We're not talking about people who are trying to do the right thing. We are talking about commercial entity business transactions that are driven by a desire for marketing.
I'm Lynn Hatter.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Gainey, Robbie Gaffney, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to Victoria Dominguez. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us every weeknight throughout the 2020 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org.